Hey everybody, and welcome back to Serial Zombie Mom. Now, it's been a while, but I thought it was time to reprise the fairy tales. I have a whole list of fairy tales, and when I'm done with those, I'm probably even going to get into, like, nursery rhymes and Mother Goose and all that crazy as well. But today I'm going to go ahead and focus on Snow White and Rapunzel. Now, we've all seen, you know, the Disney movies. We are all used to, you know, the happy-go-lucky everything that we see in those movies, okay? You know, on the older movies, you know, Sleeping Beauty, Snow White, those types of things, you're going to see a little bit of the dark still. And it wasn't until probably the 80s that we really started seeing them say, you know what, maybe we need to dial down the gore a little bit. Because even when you go back to stuff like Bambi and some of these older movies, it's dark. You've got death. All of these movies, somebody's gone. You know, a mother's dead, somebody's dead, the father's died. Something's happened in a lot of these, you know, princess movies or whatever you want to call them. So, it's not really a surprise to know that there's dark origins here. Snow White especially. Now, before the 1937 Disney classic of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, which was dark in its own right, these stories, obviously we know with Grimm that Grimm was a little more dark. History shows us that they weren't afraid to tell these stories to their children and scare the kids. Because, essentially, it taught the kids, you know, don't go out after dark, don't trust strangers, da-da-da-da-da, you know, just, you know, it was morals to teach the children. Now, let me get into the story, the basic story from the Disney side of Snow White. As I said, it's pretty dark in its own right. As this young girl, who, honestly, she was the youngest of all of the Disney princesses. She was about 13. So, just barely, like, I wouldn't even go as far as calling her a young woman. She was a young girl. She was a girl, a little girl. But she was beautiful. You know, they mention in there the story of kind of how, you know, the mother prayed for this little girl that looked just like this, you know, whatever. And unfortunately, the mother dies in childbirth, or at least that's what's insinuated, excuse me. Now, this little girl is so beautiful, and, you know, the father remarried while she was a baby, and her beauty surpasses that of the queen by the time she starts to come of age. Now, the queen's jealousy obviously sends her into a rage. She orders the huntsman to murder the girl, bringing back her heart. Now, thank God, you know, he can't bring himself to do it, so he slaughters a deer instead, tells the girl to run off and not come back, that it's dangerous, that the mother was wanting to kill her, you know, whatever. And then he presents this heart to the queen. Now, she finds the home of Snow finds the home of seven little men who all fall in love with her. Now, not in a romantic way necessarily, but a protecting way. They all have, you know, love for her, as in they want to protect her. They want to take care of her. They want to be those little mini father figures or something for her. Now, when the queen realizes that she was lied to using her magic mirror, she decides to take things into her own hand, poisons the apple, disguises herself, presents the apple to Snow, you know, gets her to trust her thinking she's a little old woman, and then gets her to eat it. Now, the story has a chance meeting with a prince who then winds up seeking her out and goes to give her, you know, true love's kiss to break this spell. Now, it's funny because in the Disney movie, you know, it's almost always insinuated that true love's kiss is always going to cure everything, okay? But I think it looks more like he's getting ready to kiss her goodbye, only for her to wake up due to this true love's kiss. And then the queen at some point falls to her death. Now, we've all seen the movie, Dunzo, right? Nope. Now, let's look at Grimm's version of the story a little bit, and then I'll get into where the story came from. Now, in the Grimm original story, the stepmother actually asks for her liver and lungs, and not her heart. The huntsman gets them from a young boar instead of a deer. You know, little trivial differences, you know, whatever. Nothing, or little simple things. Nothing trivial. He brings these to the stepmother, and instead of her just locking them in a box as proof that, you know, she had this done, like you see in the Disney version, she boils the organs in salt and then consumes them. So she thinks she is cannibalizing this little girl. So it's almost like when you go and look at a lot of these stories of cannibalism and, you know, why do they consume? What do you find as the most common when someone consumes another? It's to take on the properties, the strengths, the talents, you know, whatever. So I feel, or I take from that, knowing these things about cannibalism, that she was consuming these pieces of this little girl because she wanted to take in that little girl's properties. Now, for them to be her lungs and her liver, I mean, granted, you know, things were different back way in those days, that they didn't quite understand them as much, but I'm pretty sure they understood that, you know, the lungs were good for, you know, for breathing. Not sure if they knew what the liver was for, but maybe she thought, you know, that's where the beauty was stored. You know, maybe, who knows? I mean, I didn't get into that much research or see what they thought about things at that point. You know, you don't realize it's a filtration system, for toxins in the body. No. So that makes me just wonder, though, if she was doing that to try and take on this youthful appearance, and, you know, look younger, or if it was just to dominate that, you know, okay, now she's definitely not because I've eaten her. Like, she's whatever. So anyway, when Snow finds the little home of the dwarfs, they aren't named. We don't have these seven little personalities of the Disney Seven, okay? Doc, Dopey, Sneezy, Grumpy, Bashful, Happy, and Sleepy are not in the story. It's just seven little men. Now, in this version, we also find that it wasn't just one visit from the queen when she finds out that, you know, the huntsman lied. I believe the huntsman is also murdered at this point as well because he, you know, lied to the queen and didn't do what he was told. But there were three attempts on her life. Three attempts that the queen came in and came to the dwarf's home and tried to kill Snow. It's the third attempt where she gives the poisonous apple. And that's exactly how it's quoted in the story. A poisonous apple. Every one of these times, she's left seemingly dead. But the first two times, it was an easy fix. It was something where she came to, or it was something that, you know, they were able to, the dwarfs were able to fix. Now, being these dwarves and working in the mines, it is assumed that they were the ones that actually saved her in all of these things because of the charcoal. They knew about charcoal and healing properties of charcoal, especially after ingesting something. So there is a very good possibility that you know, that may have been, you know, something that happened in the original story that we'll get to here in a bit. So when she gives this apple to Snow, it's two-faced. So one side is poisoned, the other side is fine. So she takes a bite of the same apple and says, see, it's very good, it's crunchy, it's, you know, delicious, it's blah, blah, blah. Here, just take off of this side. So she obviously takes a bite and falls down, supposedly dead. All right. Now, the dwarfs try to help her, they try to revive her, they're unable to. They build the glass coffin around her, and put her name and birth information on it. Because they knew who she was, they knew she was the princess, so they had some basic information for her. It doesn't really state how long she was there. Now, it says many years later in the story, but we really don't know how many years it was. It could have been 5 years, it could have been 15 years, it could have been 80 years, you know, no one really knows. I imagine it was only a few years, though. So, there's a lot of, obviously, a push on supposedly magic. But anyway, the prince shows up out of a curiosity. He's told about this beauty in a glass coffin. So he shows up to see this preserved body of a beautiful girl. Well, he immediately falls in love. So, he thinks she's absolutely beautiful. I'm guessing it's a few months, you know, because, I don't know. From a medical standpoint, obviously no one can live for a few months without any sustenance. And if she's not able to swallow or anything like that, how are they getting these things into her, okay? So, it couldn't have been but a couple of days in a reality standpoint if it were to happen. But they make it seem like it was years. So, he comes in, he sees that beauty. Can we say necrophiliac? Why is he going to fall in love with this body? Okay. Got some Carl Tanzler vibes right here a little bit. You know, yeah, he falls in love, but she's just a body. So what is he falling in love with? So he asks to buy the girl from the dwarves. Let me buy her from you. You guys don't have to worry about her anymore. I've got my staff. I've got my, you know, whatever. I'll take care of it. I'll take care of her. Necrophiliac to the highest degree. Like, obviously, he wants her body so he can do things to her. All right? Pretty gross. I mean, it's not really insinuated in the story, but, I mean, that's where, I guess, my mind goes because of all this shit that I research. Now, they say no. Absolutely not. They've been the protectors. And a little part of me wonders if they were defiling her as well, and maybe just didn't want to lose that option. But the prince is so taken that he tells them, look, I will die if I can't look at her every single day. And he shows this absolute obsession over her. They eventually agree, and the prince takes her. Now, while his servants are carrying her home, they drop her. So, there is no true love's kiss. They fucking drop her. Which, essentially, the impact of the fall acts as a Heimlich maneuver, and the chunk of poison apple dislodges from her throat. She wakes up, no true love's kiss. It's just a whoops moment. So I can't help but laugh a little bit. Plus, if it's been years, why has that little piece of apple not rotted and disintegrated? You know, so there's a lot of questions from a medical standpoint and from a scientific standpoint, you know, as to what the hell. Now, they marry, the stepmother's invited to the wedding, but not told who the bride is, so when she shows up and sees Snow, she's petrified with fright to the point where she can't move. They fit her with preheated, like, iron slippers, and force her to dance in red-hot slippers until she falls down dead, because essentially it's burning her from the toes up. Okay. What the sadistic fuck is this? I mean, anyway, it's just, they were into torture back then. There are older versions of the story, however, where it's not a stepmother, but actually her own mother, and she's jealous that her own daughter is more beautiful than her. That her child has essentially stolen her own beauty and her youth. Now, in this version, the end is a bit different as well. The prince gets the coffin, it comes home, you know, without being dropped, but a servant gets tired of carrying it around. Now, I'm going to tell you, this one is very humorous. He opens the coffin, and it's like a really bad SNL skit, all right? He smacks the girl until a piece of apple comes from her mouth. It's kind of like, all right, you heavy bitch, wake the fuck up and walk for yourself. It was funny when I told my kids about this because I kind of acted it out, smacking the arm of the couch and saying, would you wake the fuck up? I'm tired of carrying your heavy ass. And they were cracking up. It was essentially just a big comedic relief that was needed at this point in the story because everything else had been so dark. Now, where did the story of Snow White start? Obviously, that's what everyone wants to know. Who inspired it? Now, let's get into it. Now, it is suggested that this originated from a real-life story of Countess Margaret von Waldeck and her lover, Philip II of Spain. Now, Margaret was born sometime in the mid-1500s. There is an estimated date of 1553 or 1554. She was the daughter of Philip IV and was supposedly poisoned at a very young age. Now, she had been sent away at the age of 16 to Brussels. She had apparently had a really horrible relationship with her stepmother, Katharina of Hatzfeld. And in the town that she grew up, because this is just going to give little bits of information as to where they may have gotten this story. It doesn't really tell a specific story in general like we find with some of the other myths and legends. Now, in the town that she grew up in, which was called Wildungen or Wildungen, and I'm going to tell you, some of these words and these names I'm probably butchering, and I apologize for that, but, I mean, you try and do it with no prior knowledge of the damn name. Anyway, this town was known for copper mines. Now, most of the workers that worked in these mines were actually children, because, obviously, no child labor laws. And they suffered stunted growth due to malnutrition and really poor working conditions. These things actually caused them to not grow appropriately. And we already know that in Europe, people's stature was a little shorter anyway. You were lucky to see a man get over the height of about 5'8". Maybe 5'10", if you were lucky. And that was normal. Like, you did not see men of 6'2", 6'4", 6'8". You know, you didn't see that. So, they were already a little short of stature. And then you have these issues stunting their growth. Massive amounts of minerals, things like that, can cause different issues, whether it be mental issues, health issues, different things like that. So if these children are working in these copper mines and working around all of these, you know, different chemical compounds, then not only are they going to have the malnutrition and the poor working conditions, but they're going to have sicknesses, illnesses, things that are going to affect their growth. Now, they were actually referred to as poor dwarfs during this time. So essentially, they were just children or young people. They weren't really little people. Now, what I'm not going to say that there were no little people during that time. You know, obviously, achondroplasia was still a thing that happened back then. You know, but unfortunately, those little people were turned into, you know, showpieces and shown around because it was such a different thing to see. It's not as normal as we see it today, and where it's, okay, there's just a little person walking over there. It's not a big deal. Back then, it was a big deal. So there's a few options that we have there as to what happened with some of these kids, okay? Or some of these young people. So that may have been where the dwarfs came from, where the seven dwarfs came from. It was seven children or seven young people living in this home that, you know, were stricken with different health issues that had stunted their growth. Anyway, now Margaret or Margaretha is in Brussels. And she falls in love with a prince who would eventually become Philip II. Her father and her horrid stepmother disapprove of the relationship. They deem it politically inconvenient. This tells me that this is not the joining of these two countries. This is not what they were wanting. This was opposing what they were wanting to see. Back in those days, you saw marriages and relationships come together to join to communities, to kingdoms, to locations for one reason or another, whether it be a process of transferring goods, whether it be peace or civility in two kingdoms together as forming an alliance. You know, but this turned out to be something that was not necessarily in the favor of her parents. So they said, hell no, it's not going to happen. You can't do this. She must have fought that. And she and Philip must have fought that and tried to be together anyway, because at the age of 21, she was poisoned. And it points to the King of Spain dispatching agents to murder her. So in this story, it wasn't necessarily her stepmother that killed her. It was by her own father and their hands. Like, it was pretty alarming. Now, there's also a comparison in Roman mythology that there was a young woman who was considered to be the most beautiful woman in the land, and so beautiful that the gods Apollo and Hermes both fell in love with her. Now, apparently, these sadistic fucks that the gods were decide, I can't win her over right now, so personally, so I'm gonna, you know, Hermes says he's gonna put her to sleep with the touch of his, and I don't know if I'm saying this right, the catechus. So he touches her with the catechus, puts her to sleep, and rapes her in her sleep. Apollo also decides to go after her, disguises himself as an old crone, hence where we find the idea of the little old woman selling the apples. He approaches her and then rapes her. So now she's been raped twice by gods. Due to this, the girl thinks, well, she boasts. I must be more beautiful than Diana herself because these gods wanted me. I'm sorry. As a survivor of rape, you do not boast. So you can tell that this is a source of fiction. But you do not boast about those things happening. I don't care if it was fucking Jensen Ackles or Ryan Reynolds or... you know, one of them did something like that to me. I would not be boasting about it. Like, regardless of the fact that I think they're fucking gorgeous. But... rape is rape. Flat out. But anyway, she goes in and she boasts about it. And Diana, because this girl is saying, I must be more beautiful than the goddess of beauty herself, she gets jealous, upset by everything, and shoots her through the tongue with an arrow. Essentially to silence her. You know, shut the fuck up. You're not more beautiful than me. They just had a thing for you. You know, whatever. So, pretty interesting little comparison in there. Now, one other interesting theory is something kind of newer. And there has been recent evidence, I believe it was in 2017 or 2019, that someone found evidence that Snow White was based actually on Maria Sophia Margaret Caterina, the Baroness von... sorry, this is ridiculously long. Baroness von Unt zu Urthrul. The fuck? Born June 25th of 1725. Her father was Philip Christoph von Unterzürthrul, whatever, and was the local rep for the Prince Elector in Mainz, or Mons. Now, when Maria Sophia's birth mother dies in 1738, it's only a few years till her father remarries in 1743. Now, the stepmother, Claudia Elizabeth von Richtenstein, what the fuck, was essentially like the stepmother in Cinderella, making her children more important than Maria Sophia. Now, a mirror, referred to as the talking mirror, can still be seen at the Spessart Museum in the Lohr Castle where she actually lived. There was a gravestone found for Maria Sophia in 2019. Now, I'm just going to put this out there, and I'm going to say this now before I get on to Rapunzel. When you read through all these stories from mythology, all these, I mean, myths and legends and all of these stories, as I've talked about multiple times in the past, it's kind of like that game telephone. One person tells a story. By the time it gets to the 100th person, that story is totally different, okay? It kind of goes the same here. Stories like that came from some truth, okay? Mm-hmm. There is always some truth in any story that is told. Someone writes a story of fiction. There is some truth there. They had to have gotten the idea from something. So what was it? Now I'm going to say one very, 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 very controversial thing, really quickly. But isn't that essentially what the Bible is? Ooh, come at me. But essentially, that's essentially what it is. It's any story. Now, I'm not saying that I don't believe in it. I'm not saying anything of that because, you know, I go to church and I believe and whatever. But what I'm saying is if we want to get down to the nitty-gritty and we want to pick apart all these stories, they all come from some truth, all right? Now, was there magic where this was happening and that was happening and whatever? Was there a talking mirror? Probably not. But how much do we really truly know about the past? We obviously weren't there, and now we're trying to deduce everything from science and discoveries. So, controversy, 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 come at me because I said that. Now, this shows me also that why can't one real life story inspire 5 or 6 different stories? So this one with the stepmother, Claudia Elizabeth von Richtenstein, like I said, she was like Cinderella's stepmother. She wanted Maria Sophia to be less than her own children. Very much like the stepmother and the stepsisters in Cinderella. Why can't a little piece of that be where that came from? So I know we've talked about some of these already. I know we've gotten into the end of that, and I'm gonna kind of make this into a point now. Everything came from some sort of truth. Everything. Anything we know, any fairy tale, any little story, even into the new Disney movies and things coming out like Moana and, you know, things like that. Moana came from a real story. You know, now when we come up with ridiculous little cartoons about shit, I mean, that's a little different, but for the most part, all of these stories are coming from some truth. Now, let's get to Rapunzel. Now, we know the story of Rapunzel that Disney glorified and Tangled, but how many people really grew up with the story? For me, this was not as popular a story in my home as some of the other fairy tales. You know, growing up, I heard more of The Little Mermaid. I heard a lot of Sleeping Beauty and Cinderella and not a lot of Rapunzel. Now, I have once or twice, you know, as a child, heard the story. So it was not something that I wasn't familiar with, but it definitely wasn't one that was focus. Now, in the story, we know of a princess who was stolen as a baby, raised by her captor. She'd been held in a high tower, and when the prince finds the tower, he sees the beautiful maiden with the long, flowy hair, and he vows to save her. Now, when the witch finds out, the witch who turned out to be her captor, finds out about an affair, she blinds him and banishes them both, okay? The original Grimm story goes into quite a bit more. The witch essentially has a garden, and it's either a miller or a baker who is living next door, or in the property next door. The wife is pregnant, and she has a very gluttonous appetite for the greens in the witch's garden. It gets to the point where she's having these cravings in the middle of the night, and the husband goes and steals greens from the garden. When the witch finally catches him, she says, you will owe me your firstborn. That will be payment for all the greens that you have stolen from me. And when the baby is born, she locks the baby in the tower. I think she raises it there for a while, you know, and then once she can kind of take care of herself, you know, she kind of takes off and does her thing. And then just comes back to feed and water and, you know, just kind of like a pet. Now, in the Grimm version, we find out that this prince comes by and he and Rapunzel start having an affair. They start having this relationship. And when the witch finds out, she only finds out because Rapunzel gets pregnant. That's how she finds out. It's not that she, you know, runs into the prince by accident, or this man by accident. It's because she realizes that Rapunzel is pregnant. She blinds him by pushing him into bushes of thorns, blinding him. She cuts Rapunzel's hair off, and then she banishes them in two different places. Like, you go over here, and then you go over here. Now, eventually, they find each other. But before they find each other, Rapunzel gives birth to twins. Alone. And in multiple stories, I hear it's in a swamp. Okay. Now, in the first written version of the story, from about 1600 Italy, it says that Rapunzel was sold to an ogre when she was a baby because of her mother stealing parsley. This kind of follows along with the story. The original true story, however, is inspired by the darkest of all. Instead of an ogress or a witch, the girl was imprisoned by her own father, who controlled every single aspect of his daughter's life. This resonates a lot right now in what's going on in Hollywood and the Free Britney movement. And I'm just going to say it. I didn't really think much of it when I was first getting the notes and typing all this in, but that sentence really just kind of made sense. We're seeing this right now, unfortunately, with Britney Spears and the issues with her, the conservatorship with her father and everything. And if we have people like Casey Anthony, Walking Free, the girl from the Slender Man stabbing literally is being sent free, or it's being motioned for her to be set free. Some of these things that are happening right now kind of pisses me off. Because if somebody who murdered a child is allowed to walk free, but this girl just wants freedom in her own life and she can't get it, something is wrong with society and with the elites. But before I get into that rant, I'm going to go ahead and finish this up, because I will rant on that if allowed. I don't have the time to rant. So let's get back to the original story of Rapunzel. Now, this story is based on that of Saint Barbara. Now, in 1275, a man recorded the story of a woman named Barbara who lived in Italy. Her father, and I'm just going to call him D because I can't say that name for the life of me. I've tried practicing before I sat down, and Dioscorus is kind of the closest thing I can say. That's about the closest I can get to it. So, anyway, Dee, her father, was a very rich and powerful merchant. Now, Barbara was to be extremely beautiful, and men had actually lined up to meet her, even princes. Now, she was just the daughter of a merchant. She was not a princess. She was not from an overly elite status, but he was so well made, like he had made himself up to be such a powerful merchant, he became part of an elite community. Alright, so he makes a rule that men could only meet her after having a successful meeting or interview with him first. So you meet me, you pass my screening, and then you can go and talk to her. Now, she didn't find this fair at all, arguing, saying, you know, she was going to choose her own husband, and fought this advice that he wanted to pre-screen them. She fought him on who he thought she should be with. Since he saw her kind of as a rebel, you know, he knew he had to work out of town quite often. He had to travel a lot for work. But he didn't want her just kind of doing her own thing, because he didn't want her to rebel to the point where she got knocked up and was no good to him anymore. So he decided it was better for her to be locked into a tower and never be able to leave. This way, she wasn't able to disobey him or to fall in love with anyone he didn't approve of. So he hires people to build this tower, as well as a group of people to care for her, deliver food and supplies to her, but they could not have really close conversation with her. They could not be face-to-face with her. They were just to deliver things to her, and that was it. You know, she would lower this basket down on the side of the tower. They would put whatever goods she needed, food, wine, linens, you know, whatever she was going to need, and then she would just pull it back up the side of the tower. Now, one day, someone left her a book. This book explained Christianity. Now, at this time, Christianity was looked at like a cult because it was something new. The Romans were trying to prevent Christianity from taking over. Now look what's happened. Essentially, Christianity kind of has taken over. Now, with the lack of love or affection shown to her by her father, she was very easily influenced by the Christian messages about God. Now, you have to look at this point in history. Again, this is in 1275 that this was recorded. Christianity was a new thing. Even though it had been over 1,000 years from the time of Christ, Christianity was becoming a new thing. 1275. So Christianity is not 2,000 years old. It's only a few hundred years old. Before Christianity, a lot of people relied on paganism. Being pagan and druid, or they would have their own religions, as we have, you know, Muslim, Buddhism, all of these different views on our higher power. Okay. As I mentioned earlier in the story of Snow White, and how I was mentioning about the stories and how the stories change. Yes, I go to church. I was raised Catholic. I'm just going to say that. I go to Catholic church. But I also understand paganism. I also understand Buddhism, Muslim, Judaism, Wiccan. You know, I wanted to educate myself enough to say, I understand. So, I won't get into all of my beliefs and all of my stuff because I don't want to start that controversy. However, I will say this. How can we denounce something that is older than what is being preached to us every day? When essentially paganism and being Druid and Wiccan, or what would be considered Wiccan today, is really just understanding and paying homage to Mother Earth, or the Earth and nature. What's so wrong with that? So I'm one of those kind of, you know, believes a little bit of everything. You know, but I won't get into the details of that. I find understanding in quite a bit of them. All right. Anyway, again, I know I get off on my rants. I had somebody laugh at me the other day when I was talking to them, or they were asking me questions about the podcast, and I get into my rants, and she laughed her ass off at me and told me, she's like, you know, it's just so funny because you never know when you're gonna kind of jump into one of these rants. You never know what's gonna set you off. So, I understand that, and I apologize if it gets everybody off. I know sometimes we need a break from things, though, so maybe it's a good thing, maybe it's a bad thing. Tell me what you guys think, but I really appreciate feedback on this, and I'll do my best to, from this point on, try and push my rants to the end of the episode. But I just find sometimes we need that little bit of comedic relief or a little bit of question in here that makes you kind of think a little bit. Anyway, so the men that came to work on the tower for Barbara, that were sent by her father, pitied her. They felt really bad for her that here she is being shoved in here only because she doesn't want to follow her father's wishes. So she asks them, look, you've already got two windows planned for this thing, so I can at least look out and see the world. Can you make me three windows instead of just two? Now, these windows were supposed to represent the Christian spirits of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. They wanted to say no, because they feared what her father would say. But they did it anyway because they pitied her. Well, maybe, you know, not only does she want this Father, Son, and Holy Spirit aspect, but maybe she just wants to be able to see around this tower a little bit better. So they do it. She then would destroy her father's pagan idols because the Bible said they were a sin. You have no idea how hard this is right now for me to not rant on destroying pagan idols because the Bible said it was a sin. I'm going to try and get back to that at the end. Now, the co-workers were even convinced at this point to bring in a priest in disguise, saying that, you know, oh, well, he's a doctor, he's just checking her over, she wasn't feeling that great. And this priest comes in and officially baptizes her as a Christian. He returns to see all she's done. Well, her father returns to see that she's destroyed these idols and that she's become a Christian. And he knows that becoming Christian and Christianity was punishable by torture and death. Now, when he realizes all this and he realizes what's happened and he sits down and thinks for a second, he realizes he's harboring a fugitive in the eyes of the government there. So regardless of being her father, he hands her over. He grabs her by her long hair and drags her to the Roman courts. Now, being obviously guilty of her Christianity, the people gather together and torture her, cutting her skin with knives and then throwing salt in the wounds. So when we hear the phrase, "Damn, that was like throwing salt in the wound," they did that. There's a reason for these sayings. They then burned her skin until she was weak and very near death. She probably would have died from these injuries anyway. But this is where her father takes the cake. He grabs a sword and cuts off her head. Now, it is said during this time that, from the Christian standpoint, that she was covered in a fog to save her from pain during her torture, and that her father was struck down by lightning immediately after he killed her, and that that was the miracle that canonized her. So following her death, she was made a martyr in the Eastern Orthodox Church. And they canonized her as a saint. Now, one may ask which miracle she actually performed to become a saint. The magical Christian version, again, including the fact that she supposedly was covered in this fog to keep her from pain, is that she flew to try to get away from her father while he was chasing her with this sword. And that if she could fly, well, let me reword that. The question is here, if she could fly the whole time, why the hell was she caught in this tower? How was she caught in this tower? They have bars on the window too? Were the windows just too tiny for her to get out of? As we know, people don't fly. You know, we would really have to have a magical intervention here. But anyway. Now, there is also a Persian version from the Book of Kings from 1000, or around the year 1000, which supposedly tells of the men that would someday be royalty, obviously with the Book of Kings. Now, in this, they speak of two lovers using a tower for a secret rendezvous place where they would meet, as they were forbidden from being together. Very Romeo and Juliet. Possibly where the story of Romeo and Juliet got its origin. Where Shakespeare probably had heard of this story and said, you know what, let me write my own version of this. Now, the girl, typically, we see in every story is that she had long, flowing, golden hair. Now, this girl would have long, dark hair that she would drop out of the window of the tower while she waited for her lover. This was kind of like his little flag to say, oh, I see her hair flowing in the wind, so let me go meet her. Now, it doesn't mean that her hair was long enough for him to climb, but of course, what's going to make a story more exciting, but something that is a little ridiculous like this? It is obviously going to be exaggerated to heighten the impact of the story. Now, unfortunately, this girl winds up pregnant. She is dealt with excruciating pain due to the large birth of the baby. The baby is supposed to be a very big baby. But supposedly, that child then rules for 300 years, fighting demons and going on crazy adventures. So we can see where these stories were blended to create the stories told by the Grimm brothers, and also then manifested into the stories we now know. So, there's a lot of information in here, and a lot of different things to make you rethink some of these stories and where they came from. Now knowing these things, watching these Disney movies with my children will never be the same. Little Mermaid, which was my favorite. Like, any of these stories, watching them. My kids used to watch Tangled constantly. And now, telling them these stories, they're like, oh, crap. That's pretty different from the Disney version. And they're all very surprised by it. So, if you have any ideas or suggestions on any other things that you'd like to hear really soon, please email me at serialzombiemoms@gmail.com. It might be something that I don't have on my list, or it might be something that's farther down on my list that I need to bring up. So let me know. Hit me up on Facebook in the group, or even on Instagram on some of my posts. And look forward to hearing from you, and I will see you on the next one. I hope you guys enjoyed.